Darkwraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester 2013. Lecture 7, delivered on September 11, 2013. The title of this lecture is Review of Accounting.
Today, Review of Accounting. I will dispense with my disrespect of accounting and get right down to the issues at hand here. In finance, we use accounting information, but we oftentimes have to make alterations to that accounting information to make it relevant for us. Accounting as a profession is the profession of producing a type of information product for end users, for consumers of quantitative information. So, there are consumers of numbers, groups, individuals, what have you, that need numbers. The accountants produce numbers that are, for some of their consumers, fine just the way they are. For others of their consumers, they have to go through more of a manufacturing process. So, in other words, we're talking about simply a production process. Accountants produce a product that for some users is good the way it is. For other users, it has to have more value added before it is good to them. So, for example, one of the consumers of accounting information is the Securities and Exchange Commission. The information as it is produced by the accountants is for all intents and purposes, the final product needed by that information consumer. For finance people, the accounting information is an intermediate product. We take it from the accountants, and then we process it further to meet the needs that we have. Now, let me take this a little bit more specifically. Accounting has, as I said, government consumers. It has finance professional consumers. It has other consumers as well. The stockholders are consumers of the information. Outside interest groups, for example, unions, investment fund managers, and others are consumers of the accounting information. Now, as I explained to you earlier in the course, accounting deals in historical data, and it also uses proxies for what really happened. So, for example, if I buy a building for $5 million, in reality, for a finance person, how much money has gone out of my pocket? Say $5 million. That's exactly right. It seems obvious. But in an accounting statement, that's not what you would see. Because by the rules of accounting, they are not allowed to expense $5 million in one shot. They have to break it up and essentially depreciate that $5 million over a period of, let's say, 20 years. So the accounting statement would show only a 20th or some depreciation schedule of the $5 million. For finance, we care about how much money actually went out. That means that when we see accounting statements, we have to make adjustments for what really happened versus what was said to have happened. So,
for example, well, let me get started.
That thing annoys me. That is so sucky.
What's that supposed to be, like a fox or something? Anyway, okay. Let's get down to the basics here. There are a number of different financial statements that are of use to us. And I know you've had accounting, so I'm sure you know all of these financial statements, but perhaps you've forgotten, and even if you remembered all of it, there's possibly one thing that is very important to finance people that might not have been made emphasized as a very important financial statement when you were in accounting. So the first one that we would care about would be the income statement. The income statement represents, for a period of time, the revenues of a corporation minus the expenses of the corporation. And after you've taken away the expenses from the revenue, you get down to something called profit. But those expenses can be broken down in a couple of different ways. In a manufacturing company, you will see a line called cost of goods sold. These are costs that can be directly attached to a dollar of revenue. I sold this thing for $10. I bought this thing for $6. So $6 is directly attributable to the $10. Expenses like that are cost of goods sold. Once we have taken out the cost of goods sold, we get gross income. Or gross profit. Not all companies have cost of goods sold. If you're a services-oriented company, you probably don't attach... There's no way to attach a specific expense to a specific dollar of revenue. I'll give you an idea of this right home with me. It's always easy to talk about this in theory, you know, and blow through it in a finance class. Ah, here's your damn review. And in an accounting class, it always looks so cut and dry. Just doom, doom, boom, boom. You do that. Here's what happens with my company. I produce, let's say that I am going to print a photograph. Let's say it's going to be a 24 by 16. I've got this big, huge roll of paper, and I've got these 11 ink cartridges in this massive professional printer. Out comes a print. I'll sell it. Let's say I will buy a frame for it, and I will buy the parts that go with the frame. And so when I sell it for, let's say, $250, I can obviously attach a lot of the expenses right to that photograph. The frame, for example. Obviously, that frame is attached to that photograph, so I can say that's a cost of goods sold. But what really blindsided me was, at first I thought, well, you know, obviously the ink, that's directly attached to the photograph. So there you go. I can deal with that right off the bat. No problem, that's part of cost of goods sold too. But then I realized I can't do that. I can put that right as a cost of goods sold. But then I realized, okay, the paper and the ink, I can't do the same thing because I might have to print twice, three times to get a perfect print to sell, to put in the frame. And besides which, when the inks are being blown onto that, I can't exactly calculate exactly how much ink at exactly what cost per sweep or whatever of the inks are on that photograph. So in other words, there are these expenses that seem to be perfectly attachable to a dollar of revenue, but you can't do it. The frame, yes, but then I realize I'm going to have to take those things like the paper and the inks and put those down into a more general category of expenses that aren't attached to specific items. It's just that it doesn't work. It's not as cookie cutter, cut and dried as it might seem in a manufacturing process. There are parts of that machine that I know I've spent money on that are directly attached to the final product, but I can't exactly say how much it was. So we come to this next category, which is where we take the gross income and we subtract sales, general, and administrative expenses. These are the costs that I can't exactly put onto a unit of sale. The light bill, the telephone bill, the cost of salespeople, the cost of driving out into the country, in my case, to get photographs. Those I can't put right onto a specific dollar of sales. So they end up in this SG&A expense category. And it's broken down, I'm sure in your accounting courses you saw, it can be broken down. Utilities, shipping, mailing expenses, salaries and wages. There are a lot of different things in this general category. We tend to kind of lump those together in finance, especially in an early course, and sometimes even in our practice we do. That's one thing. Now, there's another thing that is down here in this area. It's called depreciation. Depreciation is the amount of a large expense that you are allowed, the company is permitted to recognize as a current period cost. It's the amount of a large expenditure that the company is permitted to recognize in the current period as a cost. So that $5 million, the depreciation expense straight line over 20 years of that would be, what the hell would that be? What's 5 million divided by 20? 100,000? No. Will someone, for God's sake, help me out? 250, oh, yeah, I knew that, yeah. Okay, so I've got $250,000 of it I can expense right now as depreciation. Now, right off the bat, as a financial analyst, whatever I see at the bottom line for profit, I'm going to add that much back in because there really wasn't a check written for depreciation. There is no place called depreciation that you send money to. If $5 million was spent in the current period, yeah, I'm going to put that in as a cost. But if that has already been dealt with in a previous period in financial analysis, then in the current period, one way or the other, whatever is on this depreciation line, I'm going to add that right back in because that is not true cash flow. Now, take this down. We get all of those out, and we get to operating income. We take out our SG&A expenses and our depreciation expenses, and we get to operating income. Another term for this is EBIT, earnings before interest and taxes. And you'll hear me oftentimes refer to it as EBIT instead of operating income. You'll see me use the terms interchangeably, though. Know that they're the same thing, operating income and EBIT. Now, the next thing we're going to do is we're going to take out our interest expense. How much we have paid in interest on debt that we owe in the current period. Interest expense. And then from there, we're going to get our earnings before taxes. And then finally, after that, we're going to subtract out our taxes. And we are going to get net income. Really quickly, madam, what's another word for net income? Who said profit?
bad. Don't ever say profit, say net income. Okay, profit is such a dirty word. We say net income. it's profit. You know, that's the generic term, but we do say net income because it sounds so much more civilized. Okay. You'll also hear the term earnings, although you have to watch it because earnings could mean something slightly different. But you'll see net earnings. Oftentimes, we will break this down even further and divide by the number of shares outstanding and get our earnings per share, EPS, so that we know. At this line, you understand, see that net income. In an accounting sense, that is the shareholders' money. You see, because the debts have been satisfied in their timely way. So what we see down here at the bottom, that belongs to the shareholders. The residual claim that I mentioned before. And again, it's one of those things, residual claim is one of those terms that you should remember for a quiz or for an exam, residual claim. That's it right there. At least a representation through a veil, through a dark window of what the shareholders get. That's your income statement. Now, the next one that's an important one for accounting is the balance sheet. As it turns out, the income statement is actually part of the balance sheet. It's a little nodule sitting off on the side of the balance sheet that feeds a number into the balance sheet. This is just a side, actually, it's just a marginal calculation in the margin to get this number down here, net income, that goes in one place in the balance sheet. So the income statement is actually sort of like just this nodule sitting off on the side of the balance sheet, which is the core statement. Now the balance sheet has on one side your assets. And on the other side, it has the liabilities as one category. And then it has as another category the owner's equity. The owner's equity. The liabilities and the owner's equity together add up to be the assets. That's a fundamental equation of accounting. Assets equals liabilities plus owner's equity. And remember, I said that is a mathematical representation of the legal form of the corporation. The liabilities are separated by a wall from the owner's equity. The owners cannot be held liable for the debts of the corporation. They're separated from them. The corporation stands on its own. On the asset side, you're going to have your current assets. Current assets, in order of liquidity, they'll be your cash and marketable securities. I'm getting bored talking about this just this far. And then you have your accounts receivable.
That's money that is owed to you as a corporation.
And then you'll have your inventory. You also might have prepaid expenses.
In other words, you've paid a bill for a year, and what you do is you load it all onto the balance sheet and then peel off the current month's portion of it until you zero it out at the end of the year.
But I'm not going to do that one. Okay, so that gives you your total current liabilities. Then you have liabilities, assets, current assets. Dude, I'm already losing my will to live here. And then you have your long-term assets. Now, in the long-term assets, the big one is your fixed assets that you spent, how much you actually spent on fixed assets. And then from there, you accumulate the depreciation going down.
In other words, each time you take out some depreciation expense, you add it to the accumulated depreciation expense. To get your net fixed assets, which are declining at all times because you are peeling off a little bit of what you spend in every period.
I remember years ago when I was doing consulting, there was a small brewery in Columbus, Ohio, and they wanted to raise some money to expand their operation and start distributing throughout the state. And the guy who was running the operation, he gave me the financial statements, and there was no accumulated depreciation. And I said, well, we've got to fix that. We've got to get depreciation, figure out what's been going on here. And he said, well, I have a philosophical disagreement with depreciation. And I thought, well, that is the weirdest ass thing I've heard in a while. And he said, well, I mean, I've still got the asset. And if I depreciate this within 5-7 years, there's going to be a zero down there, and I've still got the stuff. I said, you're right as rain about that. It doesn't mean anything in reality. It's just how we recognize the expense you made. You're not allowed to knock it all off at once. You've got to peel it off a little bit at a time. He said, well, why do I still have the asset if I'm going to have a zero down there at some point? I said, well, you don't have to have a zero. You can have a salvage value that the asset depreciates to, but you're not going to tell me that that asset's going to stay as much worth as much in the future as it is worth was when you bought it. But I couldn't seem to get him to understand that. And anyway, I finally dumped it because he was such a dumbass. But okay. So this is your total assets. Your total assets are the long-term, your net long-term assets, and your total current assets. You put those together and you get your total assets. Wonderful. That represents, in some sense, the total amount the corporation has in value. It's not really the total thing, but liabilities. You have your current liabilities. Now, they usually, your biggie in this is your accounts payable, what you owe others. This is a figure that's always going up when a bill comes in that you haven't paid and going down when you pay the bill. It fluctuates up and down through time. Although as you grow, you'll see it tend to expand more in the heavy times and decline more when you're paying off bills. There are also, when you owe wages and salaries, but you haven't paid them yet, that would be a current liability. Things like that. And there are others in this category, too. Short-term debt. When a bill comes in, you have to recognize it on your financial statements. But then you take it away when you pay it. Accumulated other things like this. Accumulated depreciation. You can also, when you owe your taxes, you put it down here as soon as you owe the taxes. When you pay the taxes, you simply take it off cash and peel it off your accumulated taxes due. It's just the way the rules work. We don't have to worry too much about that in finance, at least certainly not at this level. But I just want to bring that up, okay? So now we get our total current liabilities. Then you get your biggies on the long-term side. You have your long-term liabilities. Now, in the long-term liabilities, the big kahunas are your
debt outstanding. And it comes on different names. Long-term debt, I'll just write it as long-term debt. There are some other long-term liabilities that can be there too. A warning to you. What you see here is not the entirety of the leverage of a corporation. Look up in here and see if there are any notes payable hiding in current liabilities. Some companies look like they are debt-free because you don't see any long-term bonds sitting there on the balance sheet, but they aren't debt-free because if you look up a little ways, suddenly you see these notes payable up in here. That's debt too. So if we're ever doing calculations with the debt of a corporation, don't be always fooled if it's just zeros in long-term debt. Look up and see if there's anything that they're doing in the intermediate or short term. But anyway, you get your total long-term liabilities. Term liabilities. And then finally, you add these two together and you get your total liabilities. And this is just review. I'm sure you already know this. The only place where you might get a little bit, I don't know this, or it's just kind of opaque, is down here. In the owner's equity section, your common stock, this is how much money you have raised by selling stock in the corporation. There's a little weird thing in this that has a historical reason. You raise, let's say, you raise $10 million. 1 million shares, and you sold them at $10 per share, common. And let's say that common stock has what is called a par value. Of 10 cents per share.
I'm going to ask you something here. And this is just, I haven't asked you before. I think this is the first time I've ever asked it. In your accounting class, were you introduced to the concept of par value? Were you shown it? Yeah, I see a few nods of heads. Was it obvious and clear what it was? Basically, and just for a review, whenever stock is issued, you do this form, it's your articles of incorporation. We are authorizing, a good example would be, let's say, a company that I formed some years back, 100 million shares of common stock, par value, and it was 10 cents per share, common. Back historically, you had to declare a little bit of value that each share had as a piece of ownership paper. That was really the only reason. It represented how much your personal stake was in the company. In fact, some courts considered it that a shareholder could actually be held for that much liability of the corporation's debts. So if I had 1,000 shares at 10 cents a share, if the corporation went belly up, and the debt holders could hit me up for $100. It really, these days, I see more and more corporations declaring no par value per share. However, most corporations do have a little bit of par value. So what that means is that when I put down the common stock value, how much I've raised, I have to break it down into two pieces. $10 million and $100,000. I think I've got it. Okay. Common stock at par value. So that would mean 10 cents times 1 million shares. So that would mean that there was $100,000 paid in common stock. And then the rest is what's called additional paid in capital.
And that would be, in this case, $9,900,000. It adds up to the $10 million, but in financial statements, you'll see this breakdown, this kind of weird breakdown. All we care about is the final number. Total common stock would be $10 million. That's all we care about. We don't care about these two intermediate numbers,
how much one is, how much the other is. It's just sort of a historical artifact. Okay, now, let's get to the rest of it. Down here, we have to build a piece of the puzzle, which is actually called the statement of retained earnings. The retained earnings at the beginning of the period, how much profit did the company start with this year, or this month, or this quarter, plus the net income for the period? That's why this is nothing but a giant side calculation, because the balance sheet needs that number. We do this side calculation and then push it right there. And then we subtract out any dividends that we gave to the shareholders, and we get the retained earnings at the end of the period. That's all there is to it. And there you go. And then what we have is the retained earnings, the accumulation of the profits of the corporation minus dividends, plus the total common stock value. You put that together and you get the total owner's equity. That's the end of it. Thank God. I was about to bore myself to death with that. Know this. For finance, the retained earnings, we don't give a rat's ass about that number. Really? It's just, it doesn't really mean anything. Because it's carrying net income, which has things that really weren't spent on, and net income does not have things that really money was spent on. And so at the end of the day, it's nice to see these financial statements, but they are an intermediate product for us. We've got to add and subtract stuff back in to get us to where we can see what's really happening. What we really care about is this term right here, free cash flow. So we move on to some other financial statements here. One of them that I mentioned here, this is done as a side calculation called the statement of retained earnings. Another one that we care about is what is called the sources and uses statement. This is oftentimes referred to as the statement of cash flows. So this is where we actually fix the financial statements from the accountants. We take the net profit. We take the net income. We add back the depreciation. We definitely have to do that because there really wasn't a check written to something called depreciation. We have to add it back. And then we start working ourselves around. We look at the balance sheets for two periods. If a liability has gone up, we add that change back in. If a liability goes down, we subtract it. So, plus or minus changes in liabilities. Plus if liability goes up, minus if liability goes down. Now, why is that?
simply because
if my accounts payable has gone up, I said I paid a bill that I didn't. If the balance sheet shows the any liability going up, that means that I said on my financial on my income statement that I expensed something that I didn't actually pay for yet. The same is true on the other side, minus or plus changes in assets. It's a minus if an asset goes up. Minus because I spent money on something that didn't show up on the expenses in the income statement. It's a plus if the assets go down, because that means that I sold an asset that I didn't show on my income statement. And once I've gotten that, I then know what the change in cash position of the corporation is. That's what I care about as a finance person. I'm going to make this as clear as I can with no doubts at all. I have a piece of paper. You're looking at me, oh, geez, don't bother me. I got a piece of paper here, and it explains to me that you've actually got quite a bit of money. You know, it turns out you're actually kind of rich. And it says that a lot of money has come into your possession. It's in this account over in Switzerland. Now, let me ask you this. What are you going to use to get dinner tonight?
Cash.
Yeah! Good. You are not going to be able to go to Steak and Snake or Snarf and Bark or Inhale and Flail and say, I've got all these papers that show that I've got a lot of money. What's going to matter is how much cash you have. That's what's going to matter. Okay? You see. Nothing else. And that's why in finance we... Oh, God. Don't get old. Just kill yourself before you get to my age. I mean, seriously, noobs. God almighty. I mean, what is it? Do I have some heroic shoulder injury or a scar on my face? No, I got an ass pain. I don't know what I did to piss off God, other than being a Jew. God. Okay. Oh, isn't that just wonderful? Okay, now, here we go. So, you see, that's all we care about. That's all we care about is how much did you cash go up or did cash go down? And so you'll see you'll get these reports of companies, well, the net income went up this period. Ha, ha, ha. Aren't they doing great? Well, it turns out that they went out and spent like drunken sailors on new equipment. They don't have any money in the bank to pay their bills. So as a financial analyst, I need to know what their change in cash position was. Yeah, their net income went up, great. But in reality, their net income went down into the ground. Their cash flow went south. And that means that I'm going to make a recommendation to sell that stock because this company might be great on paper, but how are they going to pay their bills? Cash is king. That's all that matters in the short run. Now, I've given you the income statement, the balance sheet, the statement of retained earnings, and the sources and uses, or the statement of cash flows. There's one I haven't given you yet. It's, in some ways, one of the most important of the financial statements. Which one have I forgotten? You guys have all had accounting. Which one is it? Does anyone know?
Don't whisper it. Say it out loud. And if you're wrong, I'll just say, you dumbass. What is it? Do you see it? And that's okay if you don't, because it's the one that they ignore. And believe me, you don't want to ignore it. It's called the notes to the financial statements. The notes to the financial statement. The notes to the financial statement are an art form. It is there that I explain where I got my numbers in the actual financial statements themselves. I read through those, and sometimes, I mean, I wrote these notes at times. And I mean, I would say things there, and if anyone just paid attention, they would have known why these corporations that I was representing sucked. For example, you saw we got 1 million shares of common stock we sold. Well, you know, in the notes to the financial statement, I might also reveal, oh, yeah, and the CEO and the COO of the company got free common stock, which is noted in the par value, but so small that it is not significant. Oh, yeah, we have this contingency pool that we are being sued back to the Stone Age, and we are about to be shut down by various and sundry state, federal, and global regulators because we screwed up and killed so many millions of people with our products. So we've got this reserve pool, but it's probably not nearly enough to cover all of the liability exposure that we've got. All of that's going to show up in those notes. Not in the numbers, it's in the words, in the notes. The explanations, the oh, by the ways, and a few other things. As I had mentioned before, back when I was writing 15C to 11s, the NASD would review the financial statements for all the qualifications to be listed on the NASDAQ. And the woman who oversaw compliance, and she was, like I said, her name was Claire, and she was just such a bitch, but I really loved the woman for her violent attitude toward me. She was the only person I ever knew who could call me Toad Boy. So here's the deal. She said, look, you work with corporations that really don't meet the concept of a going concern. When we do financial statements and accounting, we are making a crucial assumption. The assumption is that this company will continue to exist. That's why we can accrue liabilities and mark them for payment later. That's why we can accrue assets, because we are assuming that the stockholders will still have that value later. With very small, risky corporations, the concept of the going concern is not valid. It is not applicable. So at the end of the day, Claire told me your very last note in a financial statement should explain that because of the risk involved in this corporation, the going concern assumption behind the financial statements may not be reasonable. Investors are warned of the possibility that this company might not perform in a way consistent with the way corporations perform typically with their accounting statements. She gave me the language. She said, put it there. You have covered your ass. Because any investor, shareholder who comes back later when this company dies is going to find a lawyer to sue you in a shareholder derivative action. You lied to us. Those financial statements, yeah, they were technically correct, but they didn't tell how risky this was. And I can say, last note to the financial statement. Read it. Oh, we don't read final notes to the financial statement. There you go. I've got you. My ass is covered. Welcome to my butt plate. You understand those notes to the financial statement are actually a very important part for a scholarly, professional thinker. Whether you're in finance or not, you're going to invest in stocks. You'll do it in your lives. Read all these financial statements are wonderful. don't forget to have a look at the notes of the financial statement. Because I can almost assure you that with any corporation that you will ever survey for investment purposes, those notes are going to have at least one, if not multiple, WTF moments in them. What do they mean by that? I promise you, they're worth reading.
Okay, now down to this.
Ah, God. Just know this little rule here, and you might have been shown a more technical way of doing this, but that's because you are in accounting. Here, look, if a liability increases, that means you didn't pay a bill. So that means there's extra money in your pocket. If a liability decreases, you paid the bill, so there's money out of your pocket, real cash. If an asset increases, I lost money, my pocket's lighter, I paid for something. If an asset on the balance sheet decreases, well, that simply means that, I kind of got some, kind of sold something and I didn't mention it in my income statement. Okay, upshot of this. Oh, a mother's work is never done. Let's see if there was anything else. Oh, and that also applies to owner's equity, too. The liabilities are, interestingly enough, by the way, here are two warnings to you. We're going to work with financial statements in this class. Different companies use different names for the same stupid entry. I've seen it all over the board. It seems to me, if I remember right, we used to be required, at least for SEC filings, to use exact words for specific lines in a financial statement. Now you're going to see different terms for the same thing, and it can kind of confuse you. Well, what is that they're saying there? Even something as simple as revenue. You'll see it called sales revenue, and you'll see all kinds of other things too like that. Like I said, sometimes you'll see operating income, sometimes earnings before interest and taxes. You'll see all kinds of oddball things. In fact, depreciation. Depreciation is a word for shaving down a physical asset. If you're shaving down intellectual property that you've spent a lot of money on, that's called amortization. So you might see an amortization line here too. But sometimes you'll see, after gross income, they'll take out sales and general and administrative expenses. And then you'll see an intermediate subtotal called EBI, DBAT, or some crap like that. Earnings before interest and taxes and depreciation and amortization. Just ignore it. Whatever. Anyway. Oh, and the other thing. Watch out. European statements are different. Like, for example, I don't know if they're still pulling this, but I was absolutely befuddled when I was looking for owner's equity and I was looking at a balance sheet of a European corporation, and they use on this side external liabilities and internal liabilities for respectively liabilities and owner's equity. They called what we call liabilities, they called external liabilities. And what we call owner's equity, they called internal liabilities. Because in a sense, for them, you either owe people on the outside money or you owe people on the inside money. So you'll see all kinds of different weird things like that. Well, here we go. Now we're going to do something here. I'm going to give you a treat so that you can get a great score on an exam. And on the first thing I'll do on Monday is show you a more sophisticated way of calculating actual taxes. But for now, we just consider a percentage. But let me do something here. I got to bring down the house lights. I'm going to just put the overhead projector on. Now, this sheet is going to be on your website, up in resources and materials for the weekend. Like I said, this you'll be doing, there's another quiz, which is a simple multiple choice quiz. Now, there's going to be two of these table columns. And you need to do, they're completely different companies. Don't think they're related in some way. I'm going to show you the first company column. Is there some reason that sucks? I just said document camera. Oh, there we go. Now, each of these has different numbers that are filled in already, and your job with each of these is to figure out the numbers that haven't been filled in already. And this is just sort of like once you get the hang of it, it's not hard. But what you have to do is essentially treat this like a puzzle. You're putting in the pieces that you can get in based upon the finance or the accounting formula that I was showing you up there. It didn't look like I was showing you very many, but they really were up there. So, for example, I'm looking at this thing, and I'm saying, oh, okay, we got our revenues. Well, that kind of sucks because I need the expenses to find the net income, or I need the net income to find the expenses. One way or the other, I'm stuck. So let's see what else we've got. Well, I've got current assets, but I can also add non-current assets to get total assets. Okay, I'm dead there too. Really? Okay. So I've got current liabilities plus non. Oh, thank God. I got something. Can you tell me what I got, what I can put in here? $100,000, because I got my current liabilities and I got my total liabilities, so the non-current would have to put in the difference. Finally, we've got one piece of the puzzle here. Okay, so now I've got my total liabilities. Well, okay, let me say this. I got my retained earnings at the end of the year, $270,000. Let me look down here. I've got my common stock and my paid in capital here. Well, what would that get me? If I have my retained earnings right here, and I have my common stock and capital in excess of par, what does that buy me? Oh, I love it. Again, look. I've got my retained earnings right here. And I've got my common stock and capital in excess of par. Those are the two things that I put together to get my total common stock position. So if I work that out, where the hell are my retained 270 plus 520, what does that get me? For God's sake, I can't do arithmetic. I'm stupid. 790. Right. Good. Okay, now, if I take my total liabilities plus my stockholders' equity, what's that the same as by the fundamental equation? Total assets. So we have made the total assets of this corporation, because the total liabilities, 140, plus the total stockholders' equity, 790, that adds up to what, how much? Whoops, I put that in the wrong place, didn't I? No, I didn't. There it is. That's my total assets by the fundamental equation of accounting. Do you see how you're actually just putting together like pieces of a puzzle? Okay, so now
We've got our total assets. We've got our current assets. So can we find something else here? For our non-currents. Look at that. Because I know that my current assets plus my non-current assets have to be my total assets. Slowly, we're putting together the brain. This little beast up here is going to drive us a little bit crazy. Uh-oh, did I make a mistake? What did I do? Or did I do anything wrong? Good. Okay, so now, the problem here is that my retained earnings at the beginning of the period were $300,000, right? Now, retained earnings, and I'll write this down here. Retained earnings beginning plus net income minus dividends equals retained earnings at the end, right? So, do we have our retained earnings at the beginning? What are they? 300,000. I don't have my net income though, do I? So I'm just going to have to put a net income there. Do I have my dividends? What are they? 70,000. Do I have my retained earnings at the end? Sure do. Where the hell are they? Oh, 270. So now you just do a little bit of algebra. You got 230. Net income will equal 270 minus 230. So my net income is going to equal 40,000. Is that right? Thank goodness, that was getting boring real fast there. Every time I do one of these, I sweat. I think that there's going to be something missing. Net income is 40,000. So if I had revenue of 200,000 and my bottom line net income is 40,000, that must mean that my expenses were 160,000. And that, good people, is how you do that. The other one, there will be another company, a column on the worksheet that you download, you'll see another company. It has nothing to do with this one, but you do it the same way. It will not have the same things filled in, so you're going to have to do it on its own. And then you will put those numbers into the appropriate places. Get the whole worksheet done before you open up the quiz, for heaven's sakes. Don't try to do it while you have the quiz open. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.